Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters for today, Monday the 22nd of August. I am joined by Josh.
Hello.
And today we're going to discuss why the woke hate white people, to nobody's surprise, Liz Cheney's delusions of grandeur, and how America is becoming a dystopia rather fast. Without further ado, we're going to also explain that Carl has a live book club this afternoon at 3:30 with the author Alexander Adams about how the woke are taking over art. So if you're a premium subscriber, you can go and tune into that. If you're not a premium subscriber, please do, because we'll be promoting lots of other content that we've been doing in the upcoming segments and you're missing out. Without further ado, Josh.
So I noticed recently that a lot of woke rhetoric has kind of been amping up, targeting their favourite enemy, of course, white people.
Hello.
Hello there, if you're watching. But yeah, I thought it'd be worthwhile to just go through all of these new developments and see the boundaries which they're trying to push, because not only is it very good to have it all together to say, okay, well, if people aren't discriminating against white people, explain the content of this video, which is part of the reason I'm doing this, but also the fact that things have become more and more explicit and people are more and more tolerant of this when they shouldn't be. So without going on for too long, let's have a look first at the United States. So this particular story is very egregious. It's a Minnesota public school changing its rules to lay off white teachers before minorities.
I had heard about this, yeah.
And I mean, I don't know how much more explicit you could get. It's just like, yes, the color of your skin depends on whether you have a job or not. I mean, we're back to pre-Jim Crow era.
Well, they did say they're going to do the Ibram X. Kendi thing of trying to correct past discrimination with present discrimination. So that means
because it better,
a bunch of unrelated people hated black people in the past, therefore we have to hate white people in the present.
Yeah, it's nuts, isn't it? So I'm going to read from this article a little bit. Minnesota Public Schools reached an agreement with its teachers' union to institute a policy that will discriminate against white teachers during layoffs, according to a report from Alpha News. The agreement, which the union reached in March following a two-week strike, upends the seniority-based layoff system under which teachers who have been employed the least amount of time are the first to be fired. Under the new rules, if a minority teacher is set to be laid off, the district will instead fire the next least senior teacher who is white.
So the interceding identity is a criteria that supersedes meritocracy. So rather than the amount of time you spent being a teacher and giving the best education to kids, instead fired because white.
It's also weird that they're not just doing a sort of firing methodology of who is the worst teacher rather than who is the most recently hired, because that seems irrelevant. Maybe the most recent teacher is really good and the ones you already had before were bad.
But it seems irrelevant to us. However, if, for example, what they would say disproportionate number of black teachers turn out to be the less performing teachers, we would have no qualms about letting those teachers go, because it's in the interest of the kids to get a better education. But they're thinking in the racial paradigm. Therefore, they can't be seen to be firing black teachers because they would be upholding systemic racism.
That's exactly it. It must have been at some point they were firing too many black teachers, and therefore they've got to have this clearly unmeritocratic racist policy to maintain them in the classrooms, which isn't in anyone's interest, really, except
especially the black kids who are going to be learning under those said teachers and have worse off outcomes educationally anyway.
And I'm reading a direct quote here. If laying off a teacher who is a member of a population underrepresented among licensed teachers in the site, the district shall access the next least senior teacher who is not a member of an underrepresented population, reads the agreement, which goes into effect next spring. The justification of the racial discrimination is to remedy the continuing effect of past discrimination, as you alluded to. I mean, we don't really need to read it from their own words. We know exactly the rationale behind this, don't we?
Well, the continuing effects of past discrimination is the present discrimination. Just stop discriminating. But you don't care about discrimination. You're just racist.
Never mind the fact that at a psychological level, if you bring race to the forefront, there's something known as the cognitive recency effect, which things that you've come into recent contact with manifest in your mind more often. And this is why things like diversity training and unconscious bias training actually create more racism in people, because all they've done is bring all of these racial stereotypes to the forefront of people's minds, and therefore they can recall them more easily, and therefore they're actually turning out to be more racist.
Yeah, and the only person still clinging to the implicit association test being used for diversity training is Mazarin Banerjee, who's already turned around and said, yeah, I'm basically a Marxist. The rest of them said, because it's non-replicable, because you can basically get better at it by training your reaction time, mm-hmm. you can't use it in this way, so abandon it. But it hasn't stopped multiple people making hundreds of thousands.
Well, it still manifests in the UK government as well, yep. because we supposedly banned all of this kind of training from the government because we saw it as a waste of money and obviously an infiltration of racial politics, but it still seems to be popping up in like an eternal game of civil service whack-a-mole. So, carrying on with the article, Minnesota public schools policy is the latest example of teachers' efforts to institute policies favouring minority teachers in hiring and compensation in order to achieve racial equity. Staff at New York's city's elite Dalton School in 2020 demanded the administration pay off black faculty's student debt, and this is coming from the Washington Free Beacon. The Minnesota policy also favors minorities when the district reinstates teachers, and I quote directly here, the district shall deprioritize the more senior teachers who is not a member of an underrepresented population in order to recall a teacher who is a member of a population underrepresented among licensed teachers.
So underrepresented in what context, though? Because obviously they're saying society-wide by pure population numbers, but if you're talking about power, all of a sudden, they've achieved their evil goal of creating a new aristocratic class based on skin colour. And so they're no longer underrepresented. So it's not about representation mm-hmm. in the raw data sense. It's about, we want Gibbs. Gibbs, please.
But also the fact that representation as a word has been twisted to mean physical stuff rather than your representative representing your values, yeah. your beliefs.
Well, I've read enough German philosophy to feel no kinship with my continental European counterparts. This is a purely American import because, funnily enough, to all the Yanks out there, hello, you're welcome for creating the country.
You're going to know lots of Southerners.
Yeah, exactly.
Yanks.
Well, we're not quite the melting pot as your country is, and I don't feel much in common with the Dutch or with the French or with the Germans because we have very different cultural differences. So the idea that we're just white and black homogeneities, alien concept to us. Mm-hmm.
World War II, good example. Mm. We kind of were at war with one another. Mm. But yes, it carries on to a site. James Dickey, a senior trial counsel at the Upper Midwest Law Center, told Alpha News the policy is racial discriminatory and unconstitutional. The collective bargaining agreement openly discriminates against white teachers based only on the color of their skin and not the seniority or merit. Dickey said, Minneapolis teachers and taxpayers who oppose government-sponsored racism like this should stand up against it. Absolutely. It's nice to see that people are actually pointing out, trying to do stuff about it for once. And of course, the fact that this has become international news hasn't stopped them from going ahead with it either. So Minneapolis School District defends deal with teachers' union to lay off white staff ahead of people of colour because it will remedy the effects of past discrimination. So yes, they're comfortable enough that they're willing to defend it even when the UK press is picking up on the story, which you think for just a teachers' union, you'd think that that would be a lot of pressure to have the world's press. But no, they're confident enough that they're happy to go along with this.
Yeah, and but they weren't even prosecuted for burning down buildings in 2020, so a little bit of bad press is nothing off their reputation.
I'm not entirely sure that was just the teachers' union, though. Maybe.
No, but it was supported in that exact city, so the Overton window shifted so far that now property damage, Kristallnacht style, essentially, for racial injustice, has become the new standard. And so if that's the new bar to clear, then a little bit of, oh, we'll sack white people just because we don't like them, that's perfectly acceptable in the progressive paradigm.
So if you want to understand the progressive paradigm, Carl has done an entire series explaining critical race theory on the website. So that's certainly worthwhile checking out if you want to understand the academic rationale behind these beliefs that we seem to see coming into fruition in society far more often.
It's trickle-down black supremacy.
Yes. So as if that isn't bad enough. This next story from Fox News, white people banned from off-campus UC Berkeley student housing common areas. So a private housing co-op just off of the University of California Berkeley campus has banned white visitors in common areas, all without consent from other tenants. The Person of Color theme house is a housing co-op located near UC Berkeley that aims to provide housing to low-income, first-generation, immigrant, and marginalised students of colour, according to its website. It is a private venture and not affiliated with the university, but of course it's part of the university culture, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, in that It's symbolic of the kinds of people that are attending that university.
So I don't know what the progress is on the laws, but I even in private companies, I would have thought that civil rights legislation would have stopped you from
you
doing
would have thought,
this kind
yeah.
of. But I know California has attempted to overturn existing civil rights mm-hmm. legislation in order to do affirmative action. So I wonder if this is standing because it's not federally funded, even though it's federally associated with the university, and it, because California was successful in overturning their civil rights legislation and doing the same instrument that was done, you know, 60-odd years ago to black people, now to white people.
Mm-hmm. It says, in a leaked photo of the house rules for the co-op, tenants are instructed not to bring white guests to the home without permission and to keep the white guests from the common areas.
Have you noticed? White is capitalised there. They've started doing it as well.
Oh, great.
So capital B black, pretending there's some sort of black international nation within inside the United States. Now the parallel has happened. And so we're seeing the sides in the emerging race war ossify. A race war which we don't want to fight, by the way, because congratulations. Again, I don't feel any kinship with fully white people.
Many, this is a direct quote, many POC members moved here to be able to avoid white violence and presence. So respect their decision of avoidance if you bring white guests, the leaked house rule list states. I mean, that's pretty
But they've not even
stuff.
Capitalized white in there. That's Fox News have done that. This is the press.
White people are not entirely banned from the house's premises, but those wishing to bring white guests into the building must alert other tenants. Always announce guests in the guest chat if they will be in common spaces with you, and if they are white, one rule states.
Treat them like pets.
I know, it's really weird.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Sign your dog off if you're bringing it into the halls.
Mm-hmm. So yes, it's also worth mentioning this next Daily Mail article. Someone who lived in this building described the student house as a nest of vipers where members accuse each other of white supremacy for being white.
Progressive cannibalism. How fun. Please eat your own.
And clearly this white supremacist that's outed them by the name of Mandahai Batar. I mean, his word can't be trusted, can it?
Yeah, that's in the original German dialect, I assume.
So yeah, there are also outlets like Bloomberg whinging that white people get bigger share of monkeypox shots, early data shows, and this is now becoming some sort of weird rallying point for them.
Yeah.
So it reads.
I was going to say, when I spoke about progressive cannibalism, the gays already had their cannibal in Jeffrey Dahmer, so it's nice to see them now fractionating down to the different identities of cannibal.
Much like with COVID-19, the monkeypox health crisis in the US is hitting black and Hispanic Americans hard. Is there a double entendre there?
Oh,
I don't know.
Well, yeah.
Yet those groups are so far lagging in vaccination rates, early data obtained by Bloomberg News shows. Oh, vaccine skeptics are they? Don't let YouTube know. The US, which last Thursday declared monkeypox a public health emergency, is the epicenter of the global outbreak. The majority of cases, so far have been concentrated among men who have recently had sex with other men.
And goggled piss in San Francisco.
So you just mean gay men then?
Yeah.
Demographic data from the US... Oh, sorry.
I was going to say, there are 9 children that have contracted it.
Oh dear, yeah, I heard about one in Texas. That's slightly worrying. I hope the people involved in that have been arrested.
I'm sure it's just general skin-to-skin contact, Josh.
Of course.
Yeah.
What am I saying? Oh, yeah. It's definitely not largely transmitted a different way, is it?
ABC News literally said it's a sexually transmitted disease in an article the other day.
It is, though, isn't it?
Oh, God.
Demographic data from the US Centers of Disease Control, though incomplete, suggests that most cases are among people of color. As the end of July, black people make up 26% of cases, with known race and ethnicity information, and Hispanic people make up 32% of all cases.
Did you see the New York Vaccination Center for Monkeypox where they were queuing around the block and it was just all white dudes in booty shorts?
So apparently gay men, they've got their stuff together apparently. Oh. If they're white.
Wonderful.
They know what they're doing. Then,
oh, who?
They're not averse to having a needle stuck in their ass. anyway, so... here's something from Harvard Business Review, which I just thought was too egregious not to mention. This is from a few days ago. Research. People can learn to recognize their racial privilege. And it starts with structural racism is a reality in the American workplace.
Nope.
No citation.
Yep.
Just yes, this is what we do.
Well, it might be in Harvard. Yours, in which place everyone should quit.
Yeah. Studies have shown that all else being equal, white employees are more likely than their non-white peers to receive callbacks for job interviews, are less likely to be blamed for poor performance, earn significantly higher wages, and advance faster But despite this substantial body of research, many white Americans continue to deny that they have may benefit from racial privilege in work settings. In fact, in a 2021 survey found that nearly half of white people in the US believe... half of white people in the US believe that they are discriminated against, not privileged, due to their race.
I mean, for the first half of that paragraph, I was getting worried that they were going to start mentioning bell curves for a minute there, because that sounds just incredibly like the soft bigotry of low expectations for the black employees. But then the latter half, it's like, okay, if they're going to end this by saying we should have preferential hiring policies, aren't they? So yeah, you are discriminating against us because of our race. And I don't want to have to say us either, because again, we don't feel any kinship with all white people globally. We're not some ummah.
Yeah, you hear an English person talking about the French or the Germans. Exactly. There's no kinship there.
That's the fun part. We enjoy that. Don't take it away from us.
I mean, even in Britain, like if you're from a neighbouring city, that's almost too many degrees of separation.
Yeah, don't try and talk about racial kinship with a Scouser and a Londoner, because they're just going to say justice for the 97.
Well, you don't speak to a Scouser or a Londoner, or they might stab you. That's the trick. So, yes. It's also worth mentioning that they say all else being equal, as if that's ever possible. Like you can just isolate all variables. And yeah, this is a perfect study where we've just got it all controlled. The only thing we're looking at is race.
Yeah.
And from a research perspective, that's madness that you can do that. That's such a difficult thing to do.
It underwrites their own claim of intersectionality, that there are interlacing layers of oppression. Therefore, how are you not accounting for it? It's all just nonsense.
Mm-hmm. So it's also worth mentioning that Friends actress defends show from too many white people outrage. So Marta Kaufman, the creator of the television show Friends, continues to apologise to the casting police for scripting a show with six white heterosexual lead characters. Kaufman even pledged to donate $4 million to fund African and African-American studies at Brandeis University to compensate for not employing enough diverse performers 25 years ago.
She also grovelled about the fact that Chandler's dad used he pronouns despite being transsexual, and it's like, okay, now you're retroactively assuming his pronouns. Is that not transphobic?
Lisa Kudrow, who played Phoebe in the show, has a different perspective on the matter. Kudrow says the show's writers had no business writing from the point of view of people of colour, which is even worse. There are like several layers
I can't
of
think
nonsense.
Like a black. It's a what? Sorry, what? Like I had this in university when women were saying, oh, men can't write about women. And I said, well, no, you can, because yeah, there's a differing perspectives. So you can see that in, you know, the agreeableness data from the Scandinavian countries, for example. But unless you're writing about a biological process, you can still, quote, write what you know. And then that comes back to the great Jack Nicholson quote, because from, I can't remember which film, he's playing an author and some woman runs up to him saying she's a big fan of his books. And she goes, sir, how did you write such great women? And he said, easily, I think of a man and I take away reason and accountability, and then shuts the elevator doors.
But anyway, moving on to the UK, we're not exactly leaving the Americans with all the fun. We've got our own racism going on as well. And here is an interesting study that came out where it's looking at the portrayal of black people in UK television advertising, the perception and reality. And I'm quoting from the abstract here. Using interviews with advertising professionals and focus groups with black consumers, information on the perceptions of black people in advertising was gathered. The overwhelming message to advertisers was a simple one. It isn't about quotas, it's about the way we are portrayed. I'm not sure about that. A content analysis of all advertisements shown during prime time on free terrestrial channels over 2 weeks was then conducted. Results revealed that black people are actually overrepresented in the UK television advertisements, although this is not the case for all sectors. So I mean, I could have told you that.
Yeah, but this study was 16 years ago as well, so it's gotten, the word not to use is worse, but more evident that every single family is mixed race in an advert, and it's because individually each company has a diversity quota for their adverts. And so when you aggregate them all together in a 5-minute ad block, it just looks like a different country entirely. And that's not to say that mixed race relationships are bad. It's to say it's not what my eyeballs are telling me when I step out the door. And again, as a Londoner, I live in the most racially diverse part of the country. And even then, not every black bloke is married to a white bloke and vice versa. I said two men there, but that's also accurate.
That does happen on the TV.
I'm afraid. There's a sofa advert where they're both curling up, and there's one of them in bed. And I'm just like, well, okay, why do I need to see this? Just show me beds. I'll choose whether I want to buy it or not. It actually makes me want to buy it less, thinking there might be two men coming home in it.
So it's also worth mentioning this next part here, where here are many prominent European figures in history portrayed by sub-Saharan Africans. So yes, we've got Sir Lancelot, of course.
Where's Anne Boleyn?
Julius Caesar.
She was on there.
She didn't make the list. Apparently, there are too many to.
There's the old joke about if there's a redhead in Hollywood, it will be swapped to a black person. And then someone made a meme making fun of Hollywood of a ginger character running away from a Hollywood producer, and it said dyslexic Hollywood producer, because if you swap the letters around, it makes something terrible.
Oh, right.
Yes, which we do not avow, because Hollywood is racist, not us.
So it's also worth mentioning, I know we've covered this before, but the stuff to do with the women's football was pretty explicit as well. Yeah. England women are superb, but they are all white. Why? And should this be fixed?
What are you going to do, kneecap the footballers?
They're going to have to play in blackface, I'm afraid. So yeah, it's also worth mentioning that when the England men's team gets the World Cup final,
yep,
and the three black players miss their penalties, it's not about race.
No.
They it was really great. But when they actually win, oh, all of a sudden race.
Well, diversity was our strength until we lost.
Well, in that case, diversity was our weakness because they all missed their penalties.
Well, no, maybe we weren't diverse enough because, of course, we lost to the Italians and they're not white.
I disagree with that. Surely there must be. I mean, I don't believe in race at all, really.
No, but it's the old joke concept about the Sicilians of there's a black man hiding behind your woodshed in your ancestry somewhere. But of course, if we're going to go by the American conception, Italians were excluded from whiteness years ago when they showed up on Ellis Island. So well done to the black team for winning the Euros, I suppose.
So there's also another article demonstrating the very same from, surprise, surprise, The Guardian. England, yep, women's all-white starting 11 shines the light on deep-rooted problem. On a deep-rooted problem, should I say. So yes, there's also another article here from The Independent. If Owami Davis were white, her disappearance would cause more concern. I mean, really? Do you think that people aren't concerned about disappearing people? Well, and then it talks about Sarah Everard, but that was just an absurd level of attention, and it was a police officer.
Yeah, that's why. It was an institutional failing, and that is an actual example of institutional corruption because other police officers covered for him. But here, sorry, as a general member of the public, even someone plugged into the news cycle, I can't remember the name of every tragically missing woman. You know, it's people only have so much limited attention. It's not race, it's just time.
Here is The Conversation saying, whiteness is at the heart of racism in Britain, so why is it portrayed as a black problem? I mean, do you really want my answer to that?
The whiteness wasn't a concept progenated in Britain. Again, we have differences from our European neighbours, so it's not whiteness. It's, you know, we just say we're English. And there's such a thing as black British as well. We're happy to incorporate you if you're second generation, you grew up here. Mm-hmm. Just do as the Romans do and participate in British culture. You know, go to Greggs, drink in a spoons, complain about the weather.
So it's also worth pointing out this meme that I thought was particularly good, is that, yes, white lives matter, black lives matter, sorry, okay. Jewish lives matter, okay. Asian lives matter, okay. White lives matter has been declared a hate group. I mean, I have no problem with saying people's lives matter, no matter who they are, but the fact that there's this weird double standard where one's a hate group, one is celebrated, could it get more juxtaposed?
The mask off moment about raw power was when people kept coming out and saying all lives matter is racist. And there is a video of a guy who walks up to neighborhoods, urban neighborhoods in America, with a cardboard cutout sign just saying all lives matter, standing on a street corner, nothing to do with the protests and that. And there are just inner city black gentlemen who will run up to him and just stop hitting him.
And that sounds about right, yeah.
The statement is nothing egregious, it's non-objectionable, but just because they have been programmed by media to believe that stating everyone's has innate equal moral worth is somehow saying black people don't have moral agency or matter, they just run after him and start hitting on him. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's awful. So something that I think has gone by the wayside, but our very own John Wheatley has pointed out to me, is that there's a new University Challenge host, Amol Rajan, to replace Paxman.
Yeah, Jeremy Paxman.
Who is the grumpiest human being I have ever had the displeasure of watching. So he was actually on University Challenge, a celebrity version, and he was asked the question, and I quote directly here, what name is given to the principle that in every hierarchy, each individual is promoted until they reach the level of their incompetence? And Amol buzzed in early for this question and got it wrong. And what it is a meritocracy. So no wonder he got it wrong, because he's probably not come into contact with it before, has he? So There's also another insufferable article from The Guardian saying the phrase white working class is a fiction, so why are the Tories obsessed with it? And it, the byline says, working class people are more diverse than any other social group, so why is the right so obsessed with peddling a fake narrative that it's white people who have been left behind?
Because poor immigrant people in this country often self-segregate. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the satellite states of Pakistanis, for example, in Bradford and Telford, etc. So that means just by nature of England being natively Caucasian, you're going to have neighbourhoods which are majority white, which aren't very well off. Therefore, white working
class.
Well,
there's also the fact that they have all the disadvantages of other groups, but also they have the state actively discriminating against them.
Yeah,
so they've got the hardest time of all. It's like, it's why white working class boys seem to do the worst out of any demographic group in a number of different metrics. Mm. It's because they're both male and they're white and working class. Mm. So they've got perfect trifecta of disadvantage there that is being ignored or actively encouraged.
Intersectional,
in some cases,
you might say.
You could say that, yeah. So some more general stuff is an Australian access has claimed that you should never wear feathers as accessories to music festivals because it is wrong and harmful.
Oh, was this going to be about the indigenous in mm-hmm. Australia?
Natalie, who is of Peruvian and Argentinian descent and identifies as an indigenous woman, shared a lengthy Instagram post on Tuesday insisting that feathers have no place at festivals such as Burning Man.
People have no place at Burning Man. Mm-hmm. It's inhospitable for human habitation.
It is in the middle of a desert, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, how privileged do you have to be to have this as your problem? I saw some people wearing feathers at a music festival and it offended me. It's ridiculous, isn't it? And here's an article from Wired, A Glimpse of a Future Without White People.
Oh, okay.
Not quite as genocidal as it might seem. It's talking about a book. It starts with, whiteness is a seduction. Whiteness is also an illusion. These are the twin motifs on which Pakistani writer Mohsin Hamid props up The Last White Man, which is his book.
This was covered in a weekend segment fairly recently, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So yeah, I'm not going to go over it too much, but yes, this is being touted. Loads of media outlets talking about it because they like the concept of The Last White Man. I mean, it's resonating with a lot of people, isn't it?
Well, it reminds me of when Jimmy Fallon came out and said that by X year, white people will be a minority in the USA to test census data, and his audience clapped, and even he went, okay, it's a weird thing to applaud for. And I'm sure it's just because the applause sign went on, but at the same time, it seems to be a lot of people very happy that that if it were any other demographic, it would be called, you know, institutional genocide or something like that. But
let's have a look at what the end goal of this rhetoric is going to ultimately culminate in, and that is the state of South Africa.
Yeah.
So this article is titled, White People Will Be the First Target. South Africa's Julius Malema warns of impending violence because the poor are getting poorer. So when people are going to be not very well off, I suppose, it increases the likelihood that they're going to go out and do violent things. And of course, both in South Africa and seemingly in the West, these people are going to be white people because we are the scapegoats for everyone's suffering. Mm. And this is the real world implication of all of this online news cycle rhetoric, is that people are going to go out of their way to hurt people because they believe that they're being wronged. Obviously, in South Africa, some of the people might have been culpable, but a lot of the time it's innocent people being murdered for no reason other than the colour of their skin. Mm. And this isn't exactly the world I want to live in, where people are targeted with violence because they are perceived as having some sort of racial indiscretion. That's horrifying, but this is what all of this kind of rhetoric is leading to.
Okay. Not to let Sam Harris be the biggest rake jumper of last week, Liz Cheney doubled down on her anti-Trump tirades and lost her primary election. So why don't we go over...
Hooray.
Yeah, exactly. Why don't we go over some of the celebratory stuff, indulge in President Trump dunking on her, and then decide to laugh when she announces she might run for president? Truly.
As if you can't win a primary, but you're going to run for president.
Failing upwards epitomized, I suppose. Trump 2024. Speaking of controversies in American politics, if you subscribe to lotuseaters.com, you'll be able to watch our premium video on abortion. Josh and I decided to sit down and speak in the aftermath of Roe v. Wade, and also in the UK, they're trying to ban anti-abortion protesters being within a certain radius of abortion centres. We decided to have a chat about where we line up on the issues. Unlike one of our prior contemplations, this had a lot of positive comments because it was pretty reasonable, pretty cordial, and we came at it from different perspectives. But
I think it was a really good discussion. I think, although we don't necessarily agree, we had a really civil, productive conversation about all of the different moral questions and philosophical questions involved in the matter. And I think that it's some really good work from both of us, if I pat myself on the back a bit.
Yeah, well, that's like I sent to you over the weekend. When I watched it back, I appreciate having you as a colleague and friend. So it was a great
likewise
thing. Yeah. Anyway, in the spirit of mockery, shall we say, moving on from that wholesomeness, let's laugh at Liz Cheney, shall we? Liz Cheney, Trump archenemy ousted in Wyoming election. And the BBC are also crying in here because for some reason they have a stake in American politics. So Harriet Haberman blew out Liz Cheney, securing 66.3% of the vote. That's 113,025 votes. And that's in the least populated state in all of the USA, because Wyoming is overwhelmingly Trump country. It is the exact kind of place that Jussie Smollett would not like to visit at 4 a.m. for the Subway sandwich. So I'm just going to read from here. The three-term congresswoman was once a rising Republican star, only because her dad's name recognition. All 10 Republicans who voted to impeach Mr. Trump after his supporters attacked the U.S. Capitol building in January last year have been targeted in a scorched earth campaign of revenge. So far, four have retired, and now four have been beaten by his chosen candidates in primary ballots in the state of Wyoming, Washington, Michigan, and South Carolina. Only two have successfully maintained their places on the Republican ticket for re-election. The daughter of ex-Vice President Dick Cheney was the last of the 10 to face the Trumpian assault. And so if we go over to the next one, we'll read all the names provided by Scott Pressler, who runs a voter drive and a regional, you know, like urban cleanup enterprises. He's the guy that picked litter out of Baltimore. So it's Tom Rice, Liz Cheney, John Katko, Fred Upton, Peter Major, Adam Kinzinger, who has actually been districted out of running again. I thought he just wasn't going to be elected, but it turns out that they were just like, no, we don't even want you around. Anthony Gonzalez and Jamie Herrera-Boyter. So those are all the rhinos that have been booted out and won't be returning for the next term. So
hopefully the rhinos go extinct.
Yes, yeah. Well, I'm suddenly for the ivory trade again. So Trump's obviously been enjoying this as much as we do. So if we just look at his Truth Social posts. Congrats to Harriet Haberman on her great and very decisive win in Wyoming. This is a wonderful result for America and a complete rebuke of the unselect committee of political hacks and thugs. Liz Cheney should be ashamed of herself, the way she acted, and her spiteful, sanctimonious words and actions towards others. Now she can finally disappear into the depths of political oblivion, where I am sure she will be much happier than where she is right now. Thank you, Wyoming.
I love how he writes.
I do miss him from Twitter, dear God. So if we just go on to the next one, I've just compiled some of his. They're good fun. Liz Cheney's uninspiring concession speech, which we'll watch a clip from in a minute, in front of a tiny, in quotes, as if he's got a source for it, crowd in the great state of Wyoming, focused on her belief that the 2020 presidential election was not, as Trump says, despite evidence to the contrary, rigged and stolen. Don't boot us up, YouTube. It's just him saying it. In numerous states, they were not approved by state legislatures, etc., etc. Liz Cheney is a fool who played right into the hands of those who want to destroy the country. So Trump is clearly upset with Liz Cheney's belief that the election was the most safe and secure in American history, which we are compelled to say.
Yes, we can't say anything about that.
No, we cannot comment other than
except on the website.
Yeah. If we go to the next one. The fake news media has badly soiled Liz Cheney, who has just suffered the biggest defeat of a sitting congressperson in history, broke the record of another impeacher, Tom Rice of South Carolina, losing by 40 points all over the place doing interviews that nobody wants to hear. No wonder their ratings are so bad. Her record-setting horrible results were a referendum on the Unselect Committee of Political Hacks and Thugs. I love how he's just running with this actual
this
name.
Is like a... That's his new nickname for the,
yeah, it's
the
like,
rhinos.
It's like Horseface and oh, what was Crooked Hillary? Yeah, that's the new one for the January 6th committee, of which she is definitely one. Amazing how they keep her on the air. And if we just go to the last one of him gloating. I assume that with the very big Liz Cheney loss, far bigger than had ever been anticipated, the January 6th committee of political hacks and thugs will
there
quickly begin the beautiful process of dissolution. This was a referendum on the never-ending witch hunt. The people have spoken. Well, I don't think there's anything to disagree with there, given our previous reporting on how they featured the likes of Tim Pool and Alex Jones on January 6th committee hearings. The hilarious thing was Jamie Raskin, who compiled those clips. He is a Democrat representing Tim Pool's current district, where he's moved to in West Virginia. And a couple of days after he featured Tim Pool and accused him of inciting insurrection for reading out a Fox News article of Donald Trump's direct quotes, he sent him a text trying to fundraise for his re-election campaign. Go and watch the Timcast episode on that, because I've never heard the Beanie Man more angry. So if we go over to the next one, we can learn about who is Civil War, who has replaced Liz Cheney. Before her failed gubernatorial bid, Hageman served as an advisor to Cheney's short-lived 2014 Senate campaign. She then endorsed and stumped for Cheney's 2016 congressional campaign. So this is very much a knife in the back from the inside. In 2016, Hageman actually condemned Trump as a racist and xenophobe who would repel voters that Republicans needed to win in a national election. Now, we've seen this with some of Trump's endorsements, particularly like Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania, who's now the Republican frontrunner, of where he'd slated Trump before, he'd said he was pro-trans surgery, he'd been soft on China, etc. And now they've tried to change their colours and Trump has come and endorsed them. But it seems like this is probably the best of a bad bunch, because she's recanted some of this stuff.
Well, it's refreshing to see that the Republicans are actually kind of gatekeeping their own side a little bit. And I think that a lot of right-wing conservative movements elsewhere need to take notes on this, because this is actually really important, because then they can maintain hold on power far better than, say, the conservatives in Britain, where we kind of allow in people who would quite easily fit in the other side of the aisle, in the Labour Party and things like that. Yep. And it's good to see that these people are getting their just desserts.
Well, Jack Posobiec spoken about this, as he said that the Libertarian Party won't really go anywhere, even the Mises Caucus takeover has happened. But if the Republicans modelled themselves after how the Libertarian Mises Caucus took over the party, then they wouldn't need a third party. The MAGA Party is a party within the Republican Party, and it's slowly swelling and returning the Republicans to their original roots of Americana and constitutionalism, away from the uniparty union with the Democrats. We don't want any more Lindsey Grahams who high-five Kamala Harris, but then go on air and talk about how much the Democrats are destroying the country. So Hageman has not publicly addressed her prior statements, but has briefly mentioned her past opposition to Trump, telling the New York Times in 2021 that she heard and believed the lies that Democrats and Liz Cheney's friends in the media were telling at the time. But that is ancient history. I quickly realized that allegations against President Trump were untrue. He was the greatest president of my lifetime, and I'm proud to have been able to re-nominate him in 2022, and I'm proud to support him today.
Now, is that true, though?
Well, you know what? I am afraid for the Americans who are represented by rhinos and whose people will say the right things to get into office and do nothing. However, I can personally speak to the fact that as an uninformed kid, I was kind of meh on Trump when I was 18, because I didn't know anything about American politics. All I'd heard was Orange Man bad. When it came out and I got to university and I started doing more personal research, I ended up watching the, of all things, Piers Morgan interview, the first one, sit down with Trump. And when I sat down and I fact check his claims about the economy and things like that, I was going, oh, actually, he's quite funny. I quite like him. And he's got some good policies. So maybe I've just been put in a media tailspin by some of the stuff I was educated on. And I hope that some of the more rhino GOP Republicans, whether or not they're just blowing the political winds, are actually coming round to the president who might be currently in exile, but riding back over the hill to another term.
I found that maybe a similar thing happens with me. I stayed up all night on the 2016 election and watched the whole thing. And I was expecting Hillary Clinton to win, and I was kind of hate watching the whole election, just like, I don't want to see this woman win it. And when Trump won, I was just like, what?
Yeah.
I was just like, well, okay, then.
Do you have a Young Turks moment where they were counting off the states and you're going, what? See, I did that with the 2020 election. We had a watch party, we had drinks, we had a bet that we'd have to down an entire bottle of something if Kanye won one state. And then because of how long they took to count the votes because of pipes bursting, it ended up being rather anticlimactic because we ended up sleeping through it, etc. And then lockdown hit the next day. I love living in the UK. Hageman has long sparred with environmentalists over anti-conservation record. Dubious. A background that earned her the title Wicked Witch of the West, something she has embraced. And suddenly, because she's upsetting the Extinction Rebellion types, I quite like her. She prevented the USDA from enforcing the registration of all ranches with the federal government, is one of the complaints. So it seems she actually has some libertarian leanings. Now, I don't know the rest of her voting record, but just like your weapons, why should the federal government know exactly who's on your property and where it is at all times?
This is one of the main problems with some of the Republicans, is that they're too willing to entertain big government. Like, these sorts of things are obviously far better dealt with by libertarian types, and I know I'm a little bit biased being that way inclined, but I think that there's a much greater appetite in the Republican voters for this kind of direction than there is this sort of we're keeping the same size state but a different colour this time.
Yeah, losing slowly. We, like many patriotic Americans, want you guys to keep your constitution, and so if a Republican votes for anything like that, you know, registering all of your ranches with the federal government, or anything like red flag laws, so I suggest they get the same primary treatment as Liz Cheney. The last thing that she did say was, "I did vote for Liz in the last elections that she ran for. At the time, I was very happy with what she was doing, but I just don't think she cares about Wyoming. I think she cares about more what she's doing in Washington," said another Hagerman voter outside an early voting site in Jackson, Wyoming on that Monday. Another one, Horton Spitzer, a retired rancher and staunch Trump supporter, said, "There's visceral hatred, and that's going to drive people to the polls. The code of the West says ride for the brand. If you don't like, if you don't take your side, take your cow dog, walk into the sunset, and never come back." And that's the treatment that Cheney has seen. She has been retired like an old racehorse. So why is Cheney so hated? Let's go into her voting record, shall we? So I've read a stat that she actually voted with Trump 93% of the time, but I would suggest that it's the other 7% that matters. So she was anti-gun control, pro-life, but then inconsistent on fiscal responsibility because she voted for the first round of Biden's stimulus plans. Oh, she then voted recently yes on the right to contraception and respect for marriage acts. Those were acts that were introduced after the Roe v. Wade overturning with the Dobbs v. Jackson ruling, because Clarence Thomas, in his opinion, bucked the trend and said, maybe we should re-examine Griswold v. Connecticut, Lawrence v. Texas, and Hodge v. Obergefell, which looked at sodomy laws, gay marriage laws, and rights to contraception laws. All very reading rights into the Constitution. Exactly. Well, even if you agree with something like you should be able to buy contraception and anal sex should not be criminalized, then that those aren't rights found in the Constitution?
Yeah, it's what lots of people on the left misunderstand is that it's a constitutional issue first and foremost when you're looking at it from the legal perspective. Because they're saying that, yes, people should have a right to this, but the Constitution is the framework for all other American laws. And if it's inconsistent with a more important principle, then of course it shouldn't be in the Constitution.
Yeah, you can't write laws that are anathema to your founding doctrine. Otherwise, and this is why, you know, the definition of equality keeps being squabbled over by the Democrats and Republicans. If you're just trying to look for ins to crowbar your ideology into the Constitution, I don't think you can call yourself an American patriot, and you should not be in the halls of Congress, it's least like, of all involved in politics.
I think it's similar to when someone invites you into their home, you follow their rules. And I feel like the rules of America are the US Constitution, and you've got to abide by those in the same way. Even if you're born there and you've got ancestry all the way back, you've still got to abide by these rules that everyone with a sane mind accepts as a given.
Yeah, it's like the Republicans are telling the Democrats, take your shoes off at the door, please. And the Democrats are screaming about how they want to tread the turds from outside all over the carpet. Yeah,
they want to equitably distribute them.
And black people disproportionately wear sliders, so telling me to take my shoes off is racist and all this sorts of stuff. Cheney was also vice chair of the January 6th committee, which has earned her a lot of infamy. And she voted to recommend that the House of Representatives find Stephen Bannon in contempt of Congress for his refusal to comply with a subpoena duly issued by the Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol.
Could she be any worse?
Well, yeah, because she actually defended the FBI raiding Mar-a-Lago.
Oh,
because the next one, I have been ashamed to hear members of my party attacking the integrity of FBI agents involved with the recent Mar-a-Lago search. You know, the ones that broke the padlock that they put there. These are sickening comments that put the lives of patriotic public servants at risk. And you can tell all the blue and on bots have decided to like that and retweet it. Oh, lovely. I'm glad that she's getting
in the grass.
Well, she's getting organic support from her home state of Wyoming. Like, oh wait.
I like that the first comment there is breaking news. The government is not above criticism.
Yeah, exactly. Agreed. clearly, because she decided to criticize President Trump incessantly. So she's not actually the only one. Just a brief detour. Mike Pence also decided to defend the FBI. If we can play this clip.
For goodness sake.
Earlier today and elsewhere, I also want to remind my fellow Republicans, we can hold the Attorney General accountable for the decision that he made without attacking rank and file law enforcement personnel at the FBI. The Republican Party is the party of law and order. Our party stands with the men and women who serve on the thin blue line at the federal and state and local level. And these attacks on the FBI must stop. Calls to defund the FBI are just as wrong as calls to defund the police. And the truth of the matter is, we need to get to the bottom of what happened. We need to let the facts play out. But more than anything else, the American people need to be reassured in the integrity of our justice system and the very appearance of a recurrence of politics playing a role in decisions at the Justice Department demands transparency as never before. And I will continue to call on the Attorney General and the Justice Department to make that information available to the American people and do so now.
So, a few things there. Number one, if he's going for his obvious presidential bid as a centrist Republican candidate, don't model yourself after Mason Verger from Hannibal, because that lighting makes his skin look like a mask.
It also looks like he's got a bright white fade as well. Yeah. So he's going to win over the urban voters.
Yeah, he looks like an inverted colour version of the new elf from the Rings of Power, for those who aren't watching the video portion of this podcast. A few things. Number one, the FBI was a temporary organisation. It was set up by J. Edgar Hoover, who was a cross-dressing state surveillance maniac, so I already don't like it's how it's germinated. And the police versus federal law enforcement comparison is unwarranted, because you need state police. You need people appointed by their local community to address community concerns. You need people to react to rights violations as a watchman. What you don't need is some gigantic federal apparatus who, including the frontline personnel, will be kicking down doors like jackbooted thugs. Because the government decides to, I don't know, plant evidence on your laptop, etc., which has actually happened before, spy on private citizens, manufacture some sort of false flag terrorist attack, like the so-called kidnapping of Governor Gretchen Whitmer with their agent provocateurs, or even intervene in January 6th. Oh, wait, the FBI director said we can't even answer the fact of if there were FBI agents involved in the Capitol riot.
They were obviously brown shirts, and still are, for the Democrats.
Yep.
That's what they are. They're the on-the-ground wing, the violent wing of the Democratic Party. That's what they're doing.
There was a poll that came out and asked, in so many words, are they Biden's Gestapo? And quite a few people said yes.
Well, so that's undeniable at this point.
Comparison,
it?
Yeah. So if we can go to the next one. Speaking of delusional Republicans, Liz Cheney's actually saying that she's considering running for president. So I'm gonna talk to you with this clip.
Oh, no.
The great and original champion of our party, Abraham Lincoln, was defeated in elections for the Senate and the House before he won the most important election of all. Lincoln ultimately prevailed, he saved our Union, and he defined our obligation as Americans for all of history. Speaking at Gettysburg of the great task remaining before us, Lincoln said that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from this earth.
So interesting that she's going to model herself after a man who was an excellent speaker, but was happy to suspend habeas corpus and censor the press, just like with the January 6th hearings.
The goal of her to compare herself to Abraham Lincoln as well. Ugh.
Well,
American politics is just so depressing.
Abraham Lincoln at least, quote-unquote, freed the slaves, even if it wasn't his intention, as Harry has pointed out in his hangout. But what's Liz Cheney done? Oh, that's right, become famous off the back of her warmongering dad. So if we go to this clip here, she was on NBC News announcing tepidly that she might run for president.
The former president said last night, you're now headed to political oblivion. You said this fight is just beginning. You've even launched a political organization already. So let's just be straight about it. Are you considering running for president yourself?
Well, what I'm going to do, Savannah, is Yes.
Spend the next several months completing my work in Congress, obviously completing my work representing the people of Wyoming. We have a tremendous amount of work left to do on the January 6th committee. And also, though, I'm going to be making sure that people all around this country understand the stakes of what we're facing, understand the extent to which we've now got one major political party, my party, which has really become a cult of personality. And we've got to get this party back to a place where we're embracing the values and the principles on which it was founded. And talking about, you know, fundamental issues of civics, fundamental issues of what does it mean to be a constitutional republic.
But Congresswoman, you didn't answer me, yes or no.
Whatever it takes to keep Donald Trump. I will be doing whatever it takes to keep Donald Trump out of the Oval Office.
Well, I know you didn't say yes or no, and that's fine if you're thinking about it. But are you thinking about it? Are you thinking about running for president?
That's a decision that I'm going to make in the coming months, Savannah. I'm not going to make any announcements here this morning, but it is something that I'm thinking about, and I'll make a decision in the coming months.
There's a politician, if I ever heard one.
Yeah, especially one that looks like a why not librarian. But obviously, the fact that she's thinking about it is not a yes or no. It's a how badly would I get trounced versus how much of donors' money can I pocket and make away with.
So well, if she's anything like her father, she's going to get a lot of money from the arms industry because they know that, well, if she's carrying on the legacy of her father, who got lots of money from arms dealers, well, she's a safe bet.
Yeah, well, I'm sure Afghanistan would like to be reinvaded sometime soon. I just thought I'd play this one last clip about her running for president because the hubris in this is even more staggering than her concession speech.
So you've said that you're going to think about running for president. Would you be running to send a message or would you be running to win?
No, look, you run for president because you believe you would be the best candidate, because you believe you'd be the best president of the United States. And so any decision that I make about doing something that significant and that serious would be with the intention of winning and because I think I would be the best candidate.
Would your path be inside the Republican Party or outside the Republican Party?
I haven't made any specific decisions or plans about that at this point.
So running as an independent is a possibility. It's one of the things you're thinking
about.
I'm
not going to go down that path anymore in terms of speculating.
It sounds like the RNC is already trying to figure out ways to keep you out. You know, there's this idea that to get in any debate, you have to promise that you would support the eventual nominee. I mean, that's obviously not going to happen. You're not going to do that.
I can understand why they would not want me on a debate stage with Donald Trump. And I would imagine Donald Trump isn't too interested in that either.
But the entire American public are very interested.
Oh, yeah,
in seeing you up against Donald Trump on the debate stage. And this realpolitik is why even notorious Rhino, whose son has interests in Ukraine, Mitt Romney says Liz Cheney would not win a 2024 GOP nomination, despite him voting alongside her for Trump's impeachment. He said, I'm not going to encourage anyone to run for president. I've done that myself, and that's something I'm not doing again. I don't know if she really wants to do that. She would not become the nominee if she were to run. I can't imagine that would occur. Ouch.
If even Mitt Romney can see, then the writing is kind of on the wall already before she's even declared, isn't it?
Yeah, well, if Mitt Romney can commit to a position before the Uniparty tell him what to do, that's a pretty damning indictment of how badly you would be trashed. So I just thought I'd finish with some more good news.
Okay.
Not only is the chief quisling of the regime been ousted in a primary, but its very own eunuch has been fired as well. Goodbye, Varys.
Mr. Potato Head himself.
Yep, from CNN. CNN is ending Reliable Sources with Brian Stelter. Not just that, Reliable Sources as a show is being taken off air after 30 years. So this fat little ball sack decided to ruin the reputation of the show in a few short years.
Reputation, to be fair?
Yeah. Well, as a result, Brian Stelter will leave the company. So they've just fired him outright. A CNN spokesperson said to CNN Business, I'm sure that was a long phone call, we appreciate his contributions to the network and wish him well as he embarks on new endeavors. Tim Pool said that both the defeat of of Liz Cheney and Brian Stelter is like winning the lottery twice in 2 days, which I thought was a pretty good summary.
So, a rare white pill.
Yeah, we're just gonna look at Brian Stelter coping and seething with the fact that his show's off air, if we can just play this clip.
Hey, I am Brian Stelter. I am live in New York, and this is Still Reliable Sources. All right, here we go. One of the biggest media stories of the week is right here. It's the end of this show.
All right, there we go. It looks like a kid who's expecting an Xbox at Christmas opens it up and finds socks. It's just joy. I love it. So if we play the outro to his final episode.
And that's the watchword here. Accountability. So this show's going away, but there's going to be so many more. We need to have room for media criticism and debate and discussion, and we will. So much of the media ecosystem in 2022 is garbage, but so much of it is spectacular. The hard part's sorting out the treasure from the trash. These are thorny, complicated things. I know I didn't never had all the answers. I didn't even always have all the questions. But it was the gift of a lifetime to get to confront these issues on international television with the backing of CNN. Here's what I do know. I know it's not partisan to stand up for decency and democracy and dialogue. It's not partisan to stand up to demagogues. It's required. It's patriotic. We must make sure we don't give platforms to those who are lying to our faces. But we also must make sure we are representing the full spectrum of debate and representing what's going on in this country and in this world. That's why CNN needs to be strong. That's why I believe CNN will always be strong. You viewers at home, it's on you. CNN must remain strong. I know the 4,500 staffers are going to do their part to make it stronger than ever. But it's going to be on you to hold CNN accountable. And not just CNN. You got to hold your local paper accountable. You got to hold your local digital outlet accountable. It's on all of us. We are all members of the media, all helping to make it better.
That's CNN Plus. Yeah. Hold them accountable.
Can't wait to be watching CNN, seeing what happens in the future. I'm going to be rooting for it. I want CNN to be strong. I believe America needs CNN to be strong. I believe the free world needs CNN to be strong. And it will continue to be. Because all of us are going to help make that happen. The free world needs a reliable source.
And that's why I'm sacked.
For reliable sources, for the last time, I'm Brian Stelter. Thanks for being with us.
For the last time before I go home to my wife. I swear on my wife. So I'm just very glad to see that little clown gone. But the hubris of just saying that he is the progenitor of truth. You've just been wrong on pretty much every story. The other day, it took you 2 years to admit, oh yeah, the Hunter Biden laptop in which there are images of him with possible children on it might be factual, where Hunter Biden himself said, yo, I filmed myself because I had body dysphoria about my large penis. Oh, it's suddenly not Russian disinformation when he admits to it, is it?
Well, there's so much photo evidence, you need to bleach your eyes.
Yeah, I'm sorry you had to go through that. Yeah. So we just have the great Donald Trump again boasting about this. He's being very conciliatory as Brian Stelter looks for a new home, probably a fireman's sofa. Brian Stelter of Fake News CNN got fired because he lied and lied and lied about me. May he rest in peace.
Is he getting killed at the end, is he?
It reminds me of when he airstrikes Soleimani on the tarmac, the Iranian general, and then rather than put a press release out of it, he just tweeted the American flag. Just, what a boss. If we go to the next one. Trivia question, who's got less charisma, Brian Stelter or Liz Cheney? I say Liz Cheney, because Stelter could have gotten more votes than she did the other night in Wyoming. She lost by 40. If you're saying, this is just ad hominems, yeah, wonderful. So if we just go on to the last one, we'll check in what the true leader of the free world has been doing while Donald Trump has been tweeting. There's This Week in Joe Biden. Let's have a look. For those who aren't listening, he's shaking the hand of Chuck Schumer. He's taken his mask off. He coughs into his fist multiple times before giving a speech, and then sitting down, looking like a dementia patient, he gives Joe Manchin his pen and shakes his hand after coating his fist in whatever COVID he got twice in the same week because he's double boosted. So, very legitimate from leader of the free world here, of course.
We've just witnessed a political assassination.
Yeah, and now he's looking around to see his
hand. He's spreading
to
the love.
Yeah. He's trying to see which ghost is going to stand behind him for shaking his hand next, which he's done multiple times now. So as we can see, the leadership of the American Uniparty is very legitimate, though because it seems like Biden, despite his best intentions, stating he wants to run for another term, he might not be up to the task because he might be taken out by COVID first. Of course, we don't wish any ill on the current former vice president. But I am personally begging for crazy Liz Cheney to take up an independent position. And the reason is, the Republicans won't vote for her, the Democrats won't vote for her, but some Democrats who don't like Joe Biden might just split the anti-Trump vote. And wouldn't that be just such a shame if Democrats were given more options for their brand of anti-Trumpianism to really stick it to the Republicans. I also think it's a pretty good endorsement of Donald Trump that in about 6 years he's taken out the Bush, Obama, Clinton, and now Cheney dynasties.
It's beautiful to see, isn't it?
Yeah, and
I think
brings
a smile to my face.
We should, in 2024, allow the Biden crime family to become another on that body count of reputational destruction.
I've seen recently, I'm not sure if you've seen the same thing, lots of videos in the United States of widespread lawlessness and public disorder.
Yeah, it looks like the film The Warriors.
It really does, doesn't it? And some places have actually seen a total breakdown of civil society and law and order with it. So it's mostly, of course, surprise, surprise, Democrat-run cities. I mean, who could have predicted? So first and foremost, I want to draw attention to this story that Fox News have reported on, that New York taxi driver's killing sparks outcry as violent crime surges. Common sense needs to prevail. And of course, we've covered many times now the fact that lots of cities defunded their police and then refunded them and then some after they realised that it's a terrible idea. Well, now the whole rhetoric has alienated so many police officers that for love nor money, they can't get enough people to actually be in the police anymore.
Yeah.
It's not a shock to anyone because they're treated so horrendously.
Well, loads of them walked off the job for the vax mandates, for BLM, and so now you're just funneling lots of money into the few corrupt police that are likely to have stayed. And you wonder why New York is going back to the pre-Giuliani days of Midnight Cowboy or Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns or, funnily enough, Taxi Driver.
I was just about to say that, yeah. So, spokesman for the New York City Federation of Taxi Drivers called for justice on Friday for crime victims after 52-year-old Kutin Gima was beaten to death in Queens by passengers who refused to pay the fare. Three arrests have been made in connection to Gima's death, with one 20-year-old facing manslaughter charges. Police, however, say there are more suspects. Fernando Mateo joined Gimia's widow on Thursday as she remembers her late husband during the press conference. It's heartbreaking when you see a widow grieving for the man that's her backbone, the guy that supported not only her children and her family, but his family back in Ghana, Mateo said in Fox and Friends on Friday. So yes, very depressing that that people are coming over to America to work and are getting killed by apparently streets that are more dangerous than Ghana, at the very least. This man was able to live up until the age of 52, but he comes to America and gets killed.
Well, much like David Dorn, so much for Black Lives Matter, huh?
Yeah, it's well, I'll be getting on to that in a second.
More black men being killed.
So the thing that actually drew my attention to this whole phenomenon is this next clip. So if you could just play it through Twitter, John. Here we've got Andy Ngo talking about the looting of a 7-Eleven in Los Angeles. And this is obviously the footage from inside.
Yeah, those who aren't seeing it, one, there are lots of people of color and people of size specifically taking cigarettes, non-essential items from this corner store. And it looks like the early days of zombie apocalypse. Mm-hmm. That's the only way I can describe it.
Not even having the decency to cover their face, unless those are the few customers that were in there before the looting.
Wear your mask.
But yeah, what this clip doesn't show is some other footage was taken outside of the shop, and they basically congregated this huge group of people and then just rushed in so that they could get away with it.
Yeah, it's definitely all organised. This is like when we covered the London stuff on Friday. How are there a bunch of inner city teens coordinating to just loot random stores?
Yeah, there we go.
Dear God, there's...
there's loads, aren't there? So this is what's happening in LA. Obviously, this is to do with public policy first and foremost, because normally situations wouldn't get to this point in the first place. So what's actually going on here? So MSN.com has got an article basically explaining what was going on. It's titled, "Street Takeover, Looting, Shooting and Fatalities Prompt Crackdown." The incident occurred about an hour after a shooting during a street takeover in the 13,400 block of Metzl Avenue in Willowbrook area of the county that left a young man dead.
So it's a gang thing?
It seems like it.
Right.
In recent months, the takeovers have grown in audacity, spreading from the freeways to the side streets, multiple shutdowns of the new 6th Street viaduct, and now a neighbouring business. Authorities have begun impounding vehicles and holding them for up to 30 days. This week, they asked for the public's help in identifying the looters. The looting followed a street takeover that occurred around 20 to 1 in the morning on Monday in Figueroa, I think that's how it's pronounced, street, and El Segundo Boulevard. And I'm quoting directly here, motorists flooded the intersection and blocked traffic with their vehicles from all directions to create a pit in the middle of the intersection, police said in a statement. During the incident, spectators exited their vehicles and watched as motorists recklessly drove in a maneuver known as doing donuts. I don't know why they didn't just say doing donuts. I mean, most people know what that is. The spectators then formed a flash mob of looters and rushed a nearby 7-Eleven located at the northwest corner of that street I mentioned that I can't pronounce, and El Segundo Boulevard. So yeah, this seems like a coordinated attack on that shop. And they've shut down the road, and it seems to be a growing trend that I've only recently realised is a thing.
They remind me of, I don't know if you've read The Dark Knight Returns, but in the 1980s, Frank Miller wrote it after he got mugged in New York, and he created a gang called the Mutants, and they were kids in like very vibrant 80s clothing, sunglasses, shaved heads, mohawks, and they would say this new sort of language, a bit like Clockwork Orange, where it's like slice and dice. And it's just these roving street gangs of feral teenagers who are LARPing as Mad Max characters. And that's exactly what this is. It's
absolutely
horrific.
And then we've got examples like this next one of just people. It always seems to be in fast food shops, but I've seen so many of these clips recently being shared around of people just throwing stuff. No one interjects to try and restore civility. This is the main thing. People are mental.
Woman come up to a drive-through window when she couldn't get her nuggets and just beat down the glass as well. What inspires you to do this? Like low impulse control and low intelligence, it must be. That's just you're just insane.
But yeah, no one's actually stopping them. To be fair, if this were to happen in somewhere like Britain or somewhere perhaps more rurally, people in the United States, people would interject and say, no, you can't throw these things
at
people.
We have security guards at McDonald's. Why don't the US have any?
I don't know. I think it's because we've got far more of a binge drinking culture in Britain. So
yeah, but they're
McDonald's
doing this sober.
Bouncers.
This is just savagery.
Well, you don't know they're sober. They could be cracked out.
Okay, true. Fair point.
But yeah, I've seen so many of these of just breakdowns of civility in walks of life. And although, you know, it's not exactly a fine dining restaurant, it's still... It's still a walk of life that you don't want people throwing giant pieces of metal at people's heads.
No.
So it's also worth mentioning the Kentucky floods, which I don't think we've actually talked about previously.
I thought you were going to say the Kentucky Fried floods for a minute there.
No, but good suggestion. Recently there were floods in Kentucky in which the death toll has risen, apparently on the 2nd of August, to up to 37, although I haven't seen any updates since. But yes, if you scroll down on this article, John, just to show people roughly the level of the destruction here, it's pretty severe.
Yeah, that's chest-height water of debris. And
God. So you would think that a disaster of this scale, that would bring the communities together. And again, I relate to places like Britain, where we have flooding, and basically the whole community comes together to rescue everyone and make sure people's properties aren't destroyed as much as possible.
Well, it didn't in Katrina, to be fair. There were lots of people looting. I remember the infamous clip from Wolf Blitzer on CNN where he said, the people here, they're taking from stores because they have to. They're very poor and very black. It's like, what? Excuse me? What a weird way to racialize the looting, I suppose.
Didn't the American sniper, is it Chris Kyle?
Yeah.
He said that he went on top of an American football stadium and started sniping people for looting.
Yeah. Chris Kyle did nothing wrong.
So if we move on to the next article, authorities cracking down on looting in eastern Kentucky. And this is, again, indicative of the breakdown of social order. And the Perry County Sheriff, Joe Engel, says, if you're trying to take advantage of people in this situation, we're going to find you and we're going to hunt you down. We're going to lock you up. We're going to put you to jail and let the criminal justice and our prosecutors have no mercy on taking advantage of people. Sorry, it was worded a bit weirdly there. So,
well, that's a killer threat. I'll give him for it.
So respect to the sheriff there for threatening them with law and order. But yes, apparently the National Guard were called into eastern Kentucky after six people were arrested for looting. If you move on to the next article, John. Six people have been arrested for looting and stealing in Perry County, which is obviously where that guy's from, since flooding struck last week. And Kentucky National Guard military police were headed to at least two counties on Wednesday in an effort to curb crime. So, yes.
They were obviously didn't have much else to do after being on standby since mm-hmm. not being allowed to go in on January 6th. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Nancy Pelosi.
And the same county sheriff has said that they want to stop people from stealing and looting, which you think, if there's a flood, people would at least have the decency to, you know, leave people with the few possessions that they have left.
Yeah, but there's no ethic anymore. That's it. I know. It's personal entitlement. And
We shouldn't accept the standard that has been defined for us. So we should be able to harken back to a time where this would have been unacceptable and decried by everyone. But people are so jaded that they're willing to accept this. Mm. And I don't think we should. So it's also worth mentioning there is looting mayhem unfolding or had unfolded in a San Francisco jazz club after police supposedly responded to a break-in. But this story is really interesting.
Given it's San Francisco, did the burglar use the rear entry?
It's highly possible. You can find the perpetrators by all the monkeypox.
Yeah.
So yes, this is interesting for a particular reason, that this went on for hours and hours and the police precinct was round the corner and they did nothing to stop it.
Right.
So after San Francisco's Black Cat Jazz Club and Bar was broken into early Tuesday morning and police responded to the incident, two dozen looters allegedly raided the acclaimed music venue in the Tenderloin for 5 hours. So 5 hours of looting, freely taking everything from guitars to bottles of champagne worth hundreds of dollars, the club's operation manager said. Adam Chapman told some alphabet thingy that people treat the club at Eddie and Leavenworth as if it were a free market, and he feels that San Francisco police could have done more to stop it. He said the looting occurred from 2 a.m. to 7 a.m.
That's the only thing free market left in San Francisco.
That's
at this
true,
point.
Yeah. I counted 25 people who came in and out throughout the night, said Chapman, explaining that security footage showed the looters at work. It was just a free-for-all. People were just going in and taking out piles of stuff and building piles on the sidewalk. Someone went into the kitchen and meticulously filled her backpack with steaks and kitchen equipment, and she repacked it so she could fit more in. Someone stole everything out of our champagne fridge, Chapman said. People came in, stole items and left, later returning with big trash bags and flashlights to take more. He also said this all happened less than a block from a San Francisco Police Department station, and management and the owner are frustrated that more steps weren't taken after the break-in to reach the owner and secure the club.
I mean, in their defense about saying that they're piling on the sidewalk, that is where they live in San Francisco.
Yeah, to be fair, don't they have ridiculously high rents, don't they?
The homeless rate in San Francisco is insane. Have you heard of Snapcrap?
No.
It's an anonymous citizens reporting app where you take photos of fecal matter on the sidewalk and send it to the state so the government can come and clean it up because they have such a problem with public defecation.
That's
horrific.
Slightly horrifying, yeah. Yep. I mean, I thought we had it bad with dogs, but it's very rare that there are people doing it. So, as you alluded to earlier, man convicted of murdering retired police captain during St. Louis riots in 2020 has finally been convicted. And what I wanted to point out is the difference in the way in which Derek Chauvin was treated, how quickly he was tried, and the difference between this guy. A Missouri looter was convicted of murder Wednesday for killing a former St. Louis police captain during a 2020 night of violence in the aftermath of the George Floyd, and they call it a police murder, which it's not, fentanyl murder. A jury found that I think it's Stefan Cannon, was guilty of killing David Dawn while the retired captain investigated a break-in at his friend's pawn shop on the 2nd of June 2020. Cannon, 26, fired 10 shots at Dawn, 77, after the ex-cop approached the pawn shop and shot his gun in the air to deter looters, prosecutors said. Cannon was convicted of first-degree murder, meaning the jury concluded that he had premeditated the killing. He was also found guilty of robbery, burglary, and armed criminal action. He faced a mandatory term of life in prison without parole at his September sentencing.
Is there a photo of the scumbag? There we go.
He is.
Get his face. Mm-hmm. Hope he'll rot.
So yeah, obviously completely unjustified. And for the few lefties that are going to criticize us for only caring about white people, no, this is a travesty. David Dawn caring about his community, trying to restore law and order, long-serving public servant.
Yeah, left his family behind. Jesus.
Yeah, it's about as tragic as it can get, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just an innocent man killed for no reason. But yes, this is what the rioting and looting results in. So you'll be either glad or terrified to hear that Biden has a plan for a safer America. So here it is. This was released on the 1st of August, because clearly all of the looting and crime hasn't been lost on the most senile person in office ever seen. Maybe Reagan at the end might have held a candle.
Not even a dent on Biden. Reagan was funny, at least.
Yeah, he had the charm and charisma to play it off at the very least.
And he never crapped his pants in front of the Pope.
That's true.
Yeah.
To be fair, Reagan got shot several times and just recovered from it as an old man. That's very impressive. But anyway, I'm going
Biden got
a
shot
here.
And, can't say it because it's on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. So, President Biden has taken action to make our communities safer during his first 18 months in office. He has funded the police and issued an executive order to improve police accountability. President Biden has taken more executive action to tackle gun violence than any other president at this point in their administration, including by reining in the proliferation of ghost guns and cracking down on gun traffickers and on rogue gun dealers. President Biden is the first president in nearly 30 years to bring together members of Congress from both parties to take action again on gun violence, signing the bipartisan Safer Communities Act. The president also secured Senate confirmation of career prosecutor Steve Dettelbach, I think, to serve as director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco and Firearms and Explosives, the ATF. Boo.
Yeah.
Empowering this law enforcement agency with its first confirmed leader since 2015, and the president has made unprecedented investments in community-led crime prevention and intervention. So what does this plan specifically do? And it's got three points that they've outlined. Funds the police and promotes effective prosecution of crimes affecting families today, including by funding 100,000 additional police officers who will be recruited, trained and hired and supervised, consistent with the standards in the president's executive order to advance effective, accountable and community policing in order to enhance trust and public safety. Number two, invest in crime prevention and fairer criminal justice system. I wonder what that's going to look like. Including by investing $20 billion in services that address the cause of crime and reduce the burden on police so they can focus on violent crime. And by incentivizing the reform of laws that increase incarceration without redressing public safety. And the third one is takes additional common sense steps on guns to keep dangerous firearms out of dangerous hands, including by calling on Congress to require background checks for all gun sales and a ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines.
Define it. You can't.
Yeah.
It just means every semi-automatic weapon, which means every weapon, which, read in the Second Amendment, shall not be infringed. But the interesting thing is here, number one, as you suggested with number two, it's a Trojan horse for more lenient sentencing. But the more important thing about number one is, despite hiring more police, it will be through ideological criteria, just like it is with the Met Police in the UK, where we have a diversity charter and there are Spotify adverts going out saying, to police your community, you need to look like them. It's going to be racially preferential hiring, which is itself a litmus test for obeying the regime.
And that's one of the many reasons I actually read that out, because it's quite a horrifying plan once you read between the lines, although some of it's pretty explicit, like the gun stuff where they're just coming to take your guns away.
Yep.
So it's also worth mentioning that while this is all going on, the global elite located in America, it's not lost on them that chaos is ensuing and they are prepping. And you wanted to talk a little bit about your real vampires of Silicon Valley here.
Well, when I forwarded you the fact that they're building bomb shelters in New Zealand and spending billions on having, you know, underground classrooms and things like that, I did point out that the Silicon Valley elites believe a lot of crazy things. So it's not necessarily an indicator that the world is going to end. They could just be spending money on their balmy beliefs. But in Silicon Valley, they're currently taking through firms like Ambrosia, which means nectar of the gods in ancient Greece. They're taking the blood of teenagers and adolescents and pumping it through to themselves because they believe in something called parabiosis. It's syncing up the immune systems of two mice. And in the experiments where they did that, the older mice could run on the treadmill for twice as longer after the blood transfusion and organ syncing as older mice that hadn't had the procedure. But the younger mice were withering and dying. And so this is a non-lethal procedure to humans, but it is exploiting people who are younger and economically vulnerable to sell their blood to the global elite. It doesn't work, and it's also based, if you sign up and read or listen to the article, it's also based on the beliefs of the scientist who co-founded the Bolshevik Party with Lenin.
clearly a reliable source.
Yeah, this is a very deep rabbit hole, and our self-appointed global elite, the technocrats themselves, are the most depraved, vampiric individuals imaginable.
So even CNN has picked up on this. So there's an article here, how the 1% are preparing for the apocalypse. So it reads, say doomsday bunker, and most people would imagine a concrete room filled with cots and canned goods. The threat of global annihilation may feel as present as it did during the Cold War, but today's high security shelters could not be more different from their 20th century counterparts. A number of companies around the world are meeting a growing demand for structures that protect from any risk, whether it's a global pandemic, an asteroid, or World War III, or, I don't know, nationwide disorder, while also delivering luxurious amenities. And I'm quoting directly here, your father or grandfather's bunker was not very comfortable, says Robert Vincino, a real estate entrepreneur and CEO of Vivos, a company he founded that builds and manages high-end shelters around the world. They were grey, they were metal, like a ship or something military, and the truth is mankind cannot survive long-term in such a Spartan, bleak environment. Many of the world's elite, including hedge fund managers, sports stars, tech executives, Bill Gates is rumoured to have bunkers at all of his properties.
Of course he is.
have chosen to design their own secret shelters to house their families and staff. Gary Lynch, general manager of Texas-based Rising S Company, that's not me abbreviating, that's the name of his company, says 2016 sales for their customers' high-end underground bunkers grew 700% compared to 2015, while overall sales have grown 300% since November's US presidential election alone. So yes, this is a bit of an old article. The company's plate steel bunkers, which are designed to last for generations, can hold a minimum of 1 year's worth of food per resident and withstand earthquakes.
God, they look better than any like rat hole apartment you can rent in London for your life savings. Can I move in while they're not using it, please?
But yes, when people say, oh, well, the global elite don't want things to end, well, they're preparing for it, aren't they? I mean, Bill Gates has got one in every one of his many houses. And I mean, Bill Gates, for all his faults, you can certainly use him as a bellwether for the coming tyranny, can't you?
Yeah, definitely.
So there are also outlets like the New York Times talking about this, titled, I used to make fun of Silicon Valley preppers, then I became one.
Is this the Reddit CEO that did this?
I'm not entirely sure.
The Reddit CEO, the guy who went into r/TheDonald and changed comments to make them bannable offences when they weren't originally, he has also done the same thing, and he's gone and bought a bunker.
I'm not surprised. People on Reddit do like living in basements, don't they?
Fair point.
And the Business Insider has also covered this. The Silicon Valley wealthy have become super doomsday preppers by buying remote New Zealand properties, getting eye surgeries, and stockpiling ammo and food.
That's him. He was the one that got laser eye surgery. This is the Reddit CEO. Yep.
So, yes. And to correct this, I feel like I need to direct you to the video that I did about prepping. And I'm not going to suggest you get a multi-million pound bunker. I'm just going to tell you in this video all about all of the various things that you need to survive. And I'm somewhat of a camping, bushcraft and survivalist enthusiast. So I feel like I knew what I was talking about. So hopefully, in a corrective, you can help survive and get your revenge against the global elite that caused it in the first place.
Well, you're from the Southwest Coast. So when it comes to repopulating the Earth, you've already got the doing it with family members nailed down to a T.
If you're from abroad, yes, the Southwest, particularly Devon and Cornwall, the counties that are near where I grew up, have a reputation for that.
A lot of webbed toes.
Helps me swim, all right. So yes, it's also worth pointing out that this isn't entirely exclusive to the United States, because I've been criticising aspects of your country that I'm sure you disapprove of as well. But I'm going to point out here, if you play this video, John, that this happens in Oxford Street as well.
This is what we covered on Friday on the Sadiq Khan's Lawless London segment. Again, this is all organised somehow.
Yeah, it's amazing how so many people seem to come together and then start looting shops.
Yeah, a weekend with nothing better to do than jump on Ferraris and steal from candy stores, which are often criminal front organisations.
What, they're stealing candy from criminals, are they?
Yeah, literally stealing candy from, not stealing candy from a baby, stealing candy from a shop, which is an organised front for money laundering. There are 30 of these on Oxford Street alone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, go and watch the segment for it. It's very interesting. little revelation.
So yes, the final thing I wanted to end on is the fact that London is caught in a crime wave, apparently. And who is to blame? Well, Sadiq Khan, of course, the mayor.
Also say, and I've met Sean Bailey, but I'd also say Sean Bailey for not running a more robust campaign and just not, you know, sticking on script.
But my point is
that
it's the politicians that are to blame for all of this, aren't they? It's the people who create the legislation, create the atmosphere where people are allowed to get away with these things. It's not the honest law-abiding people who follow the law and want law and order and want safety for their family, is it? It's the people who have the power to change it.
Yeah, there are always going to be fatherless barbarians. It's just we need to negotiate how harshly we punish them and how swiftly we can lock them up.
I think our punishment should be unrepentant.
Agreed. With that, we'll go to the comments. There are no video comments today, and we've run over slightly, but we will get through some of your stuff on the website.
We've run over quite a bit, I think.
Yeah. Al-Sahim, today would have been the 57th birthday of David Reimer, but he died because a guy named John was too interested in a heinous experiment to care about the damage he was causing to a young boy and his brother. For more, search John Money Experiment with David Reimer. Yes, these are the two twins that were the victims of the first sex change operation conducted on children, pretty much, wasn't it?
To quote David Gilmour, money is the root of all evil, or so they say.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Valid. No, that's entirely true. He did come up with the phrases gender identity, gender expression, and those have done irreversible damage to many children in today. So on your segment on why white people are being besieged by woke racism, the biggest drawback white people have is that they have no recourse to use social media to expose what is happening. I just get a warning from Facebook for hate speech after replying to a comment by someone who claimed all the world's ills were the fault of British and American colonialism and that all the colonists should go back to their own country. Okay.
Interesting rhetoric.
I mean, didn't Jamaica say they wanted to re-belong to the British Empire at one point?
Yeah, the British Empire was very popular in Jamaica. When you poll them, their attitudes are normally very positive.
Yeah, because self-governance haven't gone down so well. And hey, I'm happy for them to have a right to self-governance, but if they'd like our help, we're ready and waiting. Omar, they want social vengeance for grievances they never personally experienced against people who had no hand in perpetrating it. It's going to get harder and harder to stop people noticing the new injustice is just as bad, if not worse, than the old injustice. The worst part of backlash against woke is that it might overcorrect. But it's not that it might overcorrect, but it might be justified. Well, here's the problem. I said about this with the Drag Queen Story Hour thing. When you see Patriotic Alternative coming out in full force, and Mark Collett has admitted to being an Nazi sympathiser on camera, the worst thing we have is that actual crazy people, not us, can co-opt the concerns of parents or just your average straight white guy who's been barred for a job for no reason and conscript them into a very violent movement that's a counter-reaction to CRT.
Mm.
We need a principled refutation, not blood in the street. Joe Kaplan, how will this not lead to resentment, hatred, and everything that comes with it? Idiots cutting off the branch they're sat on. Well, no, it will lead to resentment. That's the point. They just think by taking away speech as our medium of settling disputes, it's going to result in violence, and they're happy for that because they believe they'll win. They believe they'll staff the black-only dictatorship, the proletariat, for example. Colin P., remedy the past effects of past oppression. In other words, it was bad when it was done in the past, but it's fine when we do it now.
Yes.
I'll just go to some Liz Cheney ones. Andrew Narogue, Liz Cheney wants a rising star. She's always been a snake, only recently beloved by the media as a token Republican for the left, to tout policies as bipartisan and never really by the people, as far as I can recall. Yeah, there's always this the strange new respect phenomenon, right? Where as soon as a Republican comes out and says something the Democrats like, suddenly they kiss his backside. Or hers, in this case. And hers is rather large, and not in the fun kind. William White, the two congressmen who voted to impeach Trump and survived their primaries will almost surely lose in the general election. A large portion of the Republican base will not vote for them. That's the worry I have about election integrity narratives, is that, sure, fortification is terrible, but then when the late Georgia runoff Senate race happened, a bunch of Republicans didn't show up because they thought it was going to be rigged anyway. And that meant that the Republicans lost narrowly the election for Georgia Senate seats. And so they lost their Senate majority. So despite fears of fortification, still go out and get your friends to vote, I suppose. X, Y, and Z, have to disagree with the God Emperor there. Cheney is very much aware she is destroying the country. She's not a useful idiot. True. If you go to some of the lawless dystopia ones before we run out of time.
Sure. Omar again, after random riots, violence and destruction, why won't anyone come here for business? White flight, food deserts, lack of trust, must be racism.
Oh, I remember the bodega bro was the guy that was trying to tackle food deserts. And yeah, he ended up cucking and saying, oh, Black Lives Matter, etc., etc. But you dogpiled on him for saying, oh, there's no food in the Bronx beyond, you know, the these random little sandwich shops. And he said, oh, it's a cultural practice. How could you be so prejudiced? Meanwhile, you're saying, oh, the high rates of obesity in the black community, proportionate population, is because there's no nutritious food. It's like, well, okay, stop with the corner stores and living in giant hives and maybe have some organic and personally cooked stuff.
Well, it's actually it's cheaper and healthier to eat like fresh fruit and veg and meat rather than processed foods. It's actually more expensive, particularly if you eat things like fast food. And I remember seeing an article saying that fast food is racist because more black people go to fast food places to eat food and it gets them fat.
Was that people of color riot inside the McDonald's reparations then?
Apparently so.
Slinging lunch tables at them. It makes me laugh at how like a £5 bucket at KFC is treated as a deal. Meanwhile, I can get a bit of steak from Aldi for £2.
Mm-hmm.
Stupid.
So, Andrew Narog, why do they bother asking for help in identifying the looters? Given the typical urban district attorneys, they'll just be out on the streets again within a day. And that is almost certainly true.
Yeah, we haven't covered the Soros attorneys yet. I think we should at some point.
Definitely. And the final one, Free Will 20112. It is an apocalypse. It is the gradual death of Western civilization orchestrated by the enemy within, possibly at the behest of the enemy without.
Yeah, well, China are sort of rubbing their hands at what we're doing because they're in free fall economically. But if we collapse faster than them, then...
Did you see them demolishing all of the partially constructed buildings?
And doing it utterly incompetently and they just fell over intact.
It was beautiful to see them, just entire cities worth of buildings being demolished.
Well, at least we know the Chinese weren't behind 9/11. Anyway, thank you very much for watching. That's all the time we have today. Just a reminder that Carl will be doing a book club with Alexander Adams, the author himself, at 3:30 today over how the woke have taken over art. So anyone interested in aesthetics or combating identity politics might be very interested in seeing that. If you are on the website and aren't a premium member, go subscribe before they go live and you'll be able to watch it. But until tomorrow at 1 o'clock, thank you very much for watching. That's all from me and Josh. Goodbye.
Goodbye.